Lifkin on the Talmud's Batavis.
So the Gemara asks the following questions. Why should Shmuchim go out also in order to inform people when is Rosh Chodesh Tammuz and when is Rosh Chodesh Tevez? Why these 2 months? Of course, the answer is because we have fast days.
The fast day of Tammuz is what day? The 17th, Shavuos B'Tammuz, right?
And the fast day of Tevez is Asar B'Tevez. Okay. Alright,
so now this is what the question is. So why don't they go out for that purpose? Okay,
so the Gemara comes up with an interesting answer. The Omer Rav Chana bar Bizna, right? Rav Chana bar Bizna said as follows. He says, Omer Rav Shimon Hasida, and said in the name of Rav Shimon the Chosid, he says, my Ditzit, what is the meaning of the verse? This is the verse found in the prophet Zechariah. It says, Come out of Shem's voice, God saith the Lord of hosts, it says, Same her thee, the fast of the fourth month, with same Hachamishi, and the fast of the fifth month, with same Hashvi, and the fast of the seventh month, with same Ha'asiri, and the fast of the tenth month, Yiyana Vesh Yehuda, the session of the fifth month, they will be. Come for the people of Yehuda, in other words, for the Jewish people, they will become days not of fasting, but days of sasa v'simcha, rejoicing, happiness, and so on. Okay? This is the prophecy that he makes, that our fast days, these fast days, will turn into days of rejoicing. Now, obviously, the question is when, and also let's identify them. What is the fourth month? Well, if we count from Nisan, we're expected to count in the Bible, then of course this is Tammuz, okay? Som HaChamishi, therefore, would be the month of Av, right? And Som HaShvi, this would be the seventh month, of course. Here he's not talking about Yom Kippur. That's not, huh? It's what we call Som Gedalia, right? Zechariah, the prophet. Yeah, okay, right. He says that they're going to return, and finally the Som HaSiri, the fast of the temple will be Asar the Tevis, okay? 10th day of Tevis. They will turn into days of gladness and joy, okay? Now, Thomas S. has not mentioned. The reason being that, yeah, right. But also, there's a question, since it's not mentioned over here in the verse, if a person is sick or something like that, they're a little bit more makel as to whether it's necessary to fast on the time assessment. Well, I'll say, we'll see in a second. Just hold it in advance, okay? All right. So he says, Korel Rutzom, right? He calls these days days of fasting. The Korel Rutzom is simple. At the same time, he calls them days of rejoicing and gladness, right? So, how do you reconcile the two? So he says, Bizman sheyei shalom, in a period where there is peace, then yiyuna sasa v'simcha, then these days will be days of gladness and rejoicing. Ein shalom, but if there is no peace, then it is so. These days are days of fasting. Okay? Well, that's a good question. What do we mean when it's a time of peace? Okay, does it mean it's a time of peace throughout the world? Obviously such things doesn't exist. Okay, so if we say that it means when there's peace in Eretz Yisrael, that makes more sense. The question is, however, now we have to consider, are we in a state of peace in Eretz Yisrael? Granted that we have a Jewish state, but we know that tragedies are happening. I mean, Arabs are killing Jews. And, you know, that the enmity exists against the Jewish people. Yeah. So,
the Jewish
and the Arabs Look, the Arabs are big tzaddikim in the eyes of Clinton and the eyes of the Pope. I see the Pope also made an agreement with the Arabs.
That's it.
Yeah.
In the Sudan,
Yeah. Correct. That's what he says. I mean, the implication is that if we will have peace in the land and the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, then in that particular case, these days will be no longer days of fasting, but they'll be days of gladness. Then what will remain as a fast day? Of course, the answer is Yom Kippur will still remain as a fasting, but the others will be abolished, okay? They'll turn instead into holidays. Yeah, right, this is the implication. And if we're zeicher, if we have the merit to see the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt in our own days, so in that case we'll also be able to celebrate these as holidays and not days of fasting. Okay, tonight is the 23rd of February, right, in the year 2000, and we are learning right now, we're on Rosh Hashanah, Yud Ches Amud Beis, continuing from where we left off last week. We're describing the fast days in the month, the fourth month, the fifth month, the seventh month, and the tenth month, as mentioned in Zechariah. Those fast days will eventually become days of gladness and rejoicing. And the question is, under what circumstances? So the Gemara gave a very simple answer, right? It said, "Bizman sheyei shalom," right, when there is peace, then there will be days of rejoicing. But ain't shalom, if there is no peace, then in that case there will be some. They will become, or they will remain fast days. Okay. So, of course, the only problem that we have is, number one, what do we mean by peace? And this will attempt some explanations in a few moments, right? And the second, we're going to see that there is a different interpretation given by one of the rabbis who refers it to different days which I mentioned. Okay? So we'll see in just a few moments how it works out. But I want to get back to the original question. The original question was really, at the end of the previous page and so on, why is it, since, you know, we mentioned the month of Tammuz and Tevis, right, these months, so the question is, why didn't Shluchim go out in order to inform the people about these fasts? You understand? We mentioned Tisha B'Av, right, and obviously Yom Kippur, and so on and so forth, yeah, that we understand. But they did not go out specially in order to inform people when is the fast day of Tevis, or when is the fast day of Tammuz, okay? Well, I don't have to ask the question, I mean the Tishrei, because obviously if they go out in order to inform when is Rosh Hashanah, so the third of Tishrei is Sum Gedaliah, okay, so that we didn't have to have special for that. That's already covered by the Shluchim going out. So, therefore, they find that it's necessary to define, and as we already have hinted, we related it to the existence of the Beis HaMikdash. But let's read it from the text right now, okay? All right. Gemara now says, Omar Rapapa. Rapapa said, Hochi ka Omar. This is what the text is telling us. Zman sheyesh shalom, right, when there is peace, you will assess the simcha. Then these days will be days of gladness and rejoicing. Yesh gezeras ha-malchus. But if it is a time when the government is oppressing the Jewish people, this is what it means over here, and of course, obviously they're thinking in terms of the Roman government, because the Roman government at this particular time was in charge of Eretz Israel, but we could relate it to our own problems even today, because they can't say that Eretz Israel is necessarily 100% under the government of the Jewish people. It should be. Ideally, it should be. But we all know that America is exerting pressure, right? European Union is exerting pressure. All the Arab countries are exerting pressure upon Israel. So we cannot say that at this particular moment we have shalom. We wish that we had, but we can't say that we have. Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, here the Vatican makes a deal with the Arabs against the Jews, right? Absolutely so. So, this is the statement in the Rav Papa, that if there were truly peace, good. But when the people of Israel are suffering oppression from foreign governments, Zeres HaMalchus, then in that particular case, Ein Shalom. Okay? So now the Gemara asks another question. sorry, so I'm having a little allergy tonight, okay? Now they say, and what would happen if, for example, Ein Gezeras from Malchus, the Ein Shalom. Let's say that we're in like a state of 50-50. In other words, another government is not oppressing us, but nevertheless, we're still not in the condition of real peace. All right, let's relate that to Israel today. Theoretically, Israel should be able to resist all external oppression, right? Should be. The fact that, unfortunately, it's not, I don't know, the politics of Israel is such that they never learned how to stand on their own two feet, as far as the last few decades are concerned. Always dependent upon Uncle Sam to give them money, and to give them the arms and so on that they need, and so on and so forth. And then, unfortunately, they became too dependent upon the Geld that America was spending. And that includes financing elections in Israel. God knows, I remember that, for example, many years ago, there was a fellow I knew very, very well. He would go out campaigning for the Histadrut, you know, that's a labor organization. And, you know, the picture that he painted is that the Histadrut is settling Jews all over Israel and building, so, you know, look, there's no question that the workers in Israel did a great job. But that money, I doubt that it ever came to any of the workers. That money went into the coffers of the party so that they could build more luxurious office buildings for themselves and give themselves more perks and things like that and so on. And a lot of other organizations, not just the Histadrut, was playing the same game. Right? Yeah, right. Arthur says there's nothing new under the sun. Famous quotation from the Book of Jehovah's, right? Right, yeah. All right, so, at any rate, what if we have such a situation? Then what? So then the Gemara comes up with a very interesting statement. And it says, Rotsu Misanin. If they want, then they fast. Rotsu Ein Misanin. If they feel like it, then they don't fast. Okay. So, this already brings a whole question, you know, from the point of view of halacha. Is the implication, for example, that if you don't feel like fasting on the Shavuot of Thomas or on the Kedaya or any of the other, you know, the fast that we mentioned over here, you don't have to fast? Or is the situation not so? So it's the problem that, you know, it has a twofold aspect, okay? Aspect number one, it is obvious that if a person, for example, is sick and cannot fast on those days, then that particular person is excused from fasting on those days. Okay. So that is one aspect that we understand, because if, according to the Gemara, at this particular time, if we observe these fasts, it's voluntary, then in that particular case, we should have the right to do it. But now that raises another question. And that is the fact that Jewish communities have decided that these days must be observed as fast days. And are you privileged to simply make up your own decision that so what? So that they feel like it, you know, let them fast, but I don't have to fast. You understand? The answer is that it has become accepted as official days of fasting. So that all things being equal, there's no question that we do have this obligation to try to fast on those particular days. And we shouldn't consider it simply as a fast determined by individuals, but rather to consider it as a fast which is a tanis sibur, namely a fast which has been ordained by the community, accepted by the community, and therefore it should be observed. And we should not, you know, break with the traditions simply because we don't feel like it. As I say, a person is sick or something like that, there's no question. And in that particular case, it doesn't have the same chumras, as we would say. Okay, it doesn't have the same severity. With the exception, of course, of what? Of Tisha B'Av, which has additional chumras. And they're going to ask why Tisha B'Av is singled out. Okay? All right. And this is precisely what the question is right now. If this is the case, then Tisha B'Av Nami. So why should we observe Tisha B'Av? Why don't we say that if we feel like observing it, we observe it? If we don't feel like observing it,
We don't observe it. Because in the Pasuk in Zechariah, did he single out Tisha B'Av as different from the other fasts? The answer is no. He said, you know, the fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth month, right? Fast of the seventh month, fast of the tenth month. But that's it. So therefore, if it is equal to the others, then in that particular case, if you don't feel like fasting on Shavuos or Batamis, then you can also, you don't have to feel like fasting on Tisha B'Av. Of course, as we know, this is not the case. And so he gives an answer to his question, right? Over our Papa, so our Papa said, Shani Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is different. Why? Okay? Because of the fact that on Tisha B'Av we have many, many tzoras that have been doubled and redoubled and so on that have come upon us. So that therefore this day certainly deserves to be observed, right? Even more so than the other fast days that were mentioned. Okay? All right. Those of us who remember when we came across the last part of Masechta Titus, remember? At that particular point, we speak about Shavuos and Batamis and about Tisha B'Av, just as incidentally, and we had the famous statement that Mishanichnas Ador, right? When Ador comes in and Marvin Besimcha, right? In that case, we increase the joyousness of that month and we have all kinds of simchas and Ador, okay? But Mishanichnas Av, right? The Martin Besimcha. When the month of Av comes, then we cut down on the simcha during that particular month. And then, you know, they spoke about five great events that happened on Shavuos Batamis, why we fast. Namely, that this was the day which marks the breaking of the Ten Commandments by Moshe Rabbeinu. This is one of the things, plus other things that happened, but this is one of them. And of course, with Tisha B'Av, they also mention all kinds of horrible things that happened on that day. Not only, of course, the destruction of the first base of Mikdash and destruction of the second base of Mikdash, and also, let's say, the fact that Beitar, the last stronghold in the rebellion of Bar Kokhba against the Romans, also fell on this particular day. But they also mentioned several other things that took place on this particular day, tzoras. So because there were so many tzoras, you see, and very severe ones, particularly the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the taking away of our independence completely and so on, so therefore Tisha B'Av is Tisha B'Av, separate category. Okay. The Omar, as one of the sages said, the Tisha B'Av Chorav HaBayis B'Rishon of Ashniyon, right, that on Tisha B'Av temple was destroyed, whether it was the first temple and also the second temple, the Nilkator Beitar, and the stronghold of Beitar was also captured and destroyed by the Romans with a great loss of life in there. Okay? And they mention one other thing, the Nechrisha Ha'ir, and the city of Jerusalem was plowed over by the Romans. The Romans did this in order to destroy every vestige of any house, of any community, whatever it may be, in Jerusalem. They wanted to make it into a midbar. They wanted to make it like into a desert. Not just deserted, but a desert itself. Right, it's the same idea, you see. After the second temple, right. The first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians. Okay. Second temple was destroyed by the Romans. But even though the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, still a Jewish community, and even though, of course, thousands of Jews were taken slaves or were slain in the war and so on, but nevertheless, there still was a Jewish community in Yerushalayim. Then, subsequently, you know, the Jews again rebelled against Rome in the rebellion of Bar Kokhba, and at first they were victorious against the Roman legions for a period of 3 years. They fought harder than any of the other nations over there, but eventually the Romans gathered their forces from all over the Roman Empire in order to crush the rebellion, and at that time, as part of the Roman victory, it was to destroy the Jewish nation of Yerushalayim, and then eventually they built a Roman city on the ruins of it, and they called it Ilia Capitolina. In other words, Ilia, of course, is named after the family of the Roman emperor, A-L-I-A, Ilia, and Capitolina, which represented the capital line, and they really represented the worship of Jupiter, you see, so that they dedicated it to their own idol worship, you see. And that was supposed to be the end of Yerushalayim. Needless to say, I don't have to tell you that in all ages we have always hoped to be able to rebuild Yerushalayim. Right. Yeah. So we worked and we worked in order to rebuild Yerushalayim. All right.
I wonder if, yes, if he would have listened to Rabbi Akiva, he would have been successful.
Who? Bar Kokhba, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because after a while he became so his ego became so inflated,
yeah, right,
that he figured, you know, that exactly, he had the power in order to do, and he did not need the help of the Levita Shalini.
Yeah, that's when he made
right.
It.
That's
right. That's
right.
That happened.
Yeah.
I listened to that right. Yeah.
Correct. All right. Unfortunately, history is what it is. Yeah, it repeats itself, but at the same time, it's not exactly the same either. You know,
same thing right now.
Well, the same
right.
Thing is happening to us.
Same thing
right.
Right, now.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Absolutely so. But it helps to have a little chayil and koyachol together with the Rebbe Shalom. We need them both. Okay. All right. Tanya, we have a teaching that says, Omar Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon said, there are four things that Rabbi Akiva would teach, but I do not teach it the way he does. All right. What is the teaching? So Rabbi Akiva taught as follows. Som Harvi, the fast of the fourth month, Ze Tes Betamas. By the way, notice it doesn't say Yud Zayin Betamas, right? But it's Ze Tes Betamas. Okay. Why? Because that particular day, Shebo Hufke'or Ha'ir. On that particular day, in the days of the first temple, the wall of the city was breached so that the Babylonian soldiers were able to go into, to penetrate into the city and begin the hand-to-hand fighting with the Jewish defenders. And they fought until, of course, the destruction of the temple on Tisha B'Av. Okay. So that day then should have been observed as what? As a fast day. Okay. Shenema, because we have a pasuk for this. And the pasuk is in the in the book of Yirmiyahu, it says over there, Barvi, in the fourth month, right, B'tisha L'chodesh, on the ninth day of this month, V'yechazak Hora'ov Bo'ir, the famine was tremendous, had grown so strong, so horrible in the city. V'lo hayor lohem and there is no bread for the people of the land. My book of Stachess is not very clear. And then, because the people were starving and they had no more strength, then in that particular case, what happened? The city, meaning of course the city wall, was breached, and then the fighting began within the walls of Yerushalayim itself. So the question is, he says, V'amai Kori Nevi, why do they call this fast the fourth, the fast of the fourth? You notice that in the Pasuk in Zechariah, he doesn't name the holidays exactly. All he does is to say what? The fast of this month, the fast of the other month. All right? So, why does he call it the fourth? Because we're in the Chodeshim. Right? If you start from the month, if you say that the first of the Nisan is the beginning of a new year, then, and this of course is the biblical way of counting, then in that case, what is Revi? It's the month of Thomas. Okay, it's the fourth month. Yeah. So he says, so my corollary, he says, Revira Chodoshim, because it's the fourth month as far as when we count the months. So Machamishi, why does he refer to it as the fast of the fifth? Because the Tisha B'Av, first of all, this is Tisha B'Av, Shabbat Nisra Pesach Kehinu. This is a day upon which the temple of the Lord our God was destroyed. By my korelei Chamishi, and why does he call it then Chamishi, the fifth? He says Chamishi L'Chadoshim, because it is in the count of months, the fifth of months. So Hashavii, the fast of the seventh day, the seventh month, Ze Gimu B'Tishrei. This is the third day in the month of Tishrei. Shebo Neherag Gedalia Ben Achikam, right? Day upon which Gedalia Ben Achikam was assassinated. Umi Harogo, and who assassinated him? It was Yishmael Ben Nesanya. Okay? Yishmael Ben Nesanya Harogo, right. He was the one who assassinated him. He killed him. V'lamedcha, and it is to teach us that the death of righteous people is equated like the burning of the house of our God. In other words, that when a righteous person is killed because he professes his Yiddishkeit and he's doing something for the people of Israel, he's murdered, it's as great a tragedy to us as the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, this is the reason why this day was singled out as an official fast day. Because, after all, we could ask questions, why don't we fast on lots of other days, right? No, he was not a Jew, even though he had a Jewish name. Yishmael ben Nesanya. Okay, sounds like a good Jewish boy. Okay, if you review the history as we find it both in the book of Jeremiah, particularly that's our source, but also in Malachim Beis, you'll find it. Okay, so we find that what happened after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash by the Nebuchadnezzar was that they did not immediately exile everybody in Eretz Israel. They didn't do that. Actually, there were two exiles, first of all, under the Babylonians. The first one took place some 10, 11 years prior even to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. At that time, they took at least 50,000 of the great nobility, Kohanim, master craftsmen, political leaders and things like that, and they exiled them to Babylonia. Among them was the prophet Yechezkel, incidentally. Okay, and instead the king of Babylonia appointed Zedekiyahu as king of Judah. He was of course of the royal descendants and so on, but he made Zedekiyahu promise that he would always remain a loyal subject to Nebuchadnezzar and he would never rebel. Okay? After some 8-9 years, there was talk among, not only in the land of Yehuda and the land of Judea, that they didn't like Babylonian rule and they wanted really to have their own freedom, but they were also egged on by Egypt pulling strings to create problems, and also by some of the neighboring peoples such as Ammon and others. That Ammon, Edom, they're all pulling strings. They told the Jewish people that if you lead the rebellion, we will join in with you and we'll fight against Nebuchadnezzar. So Yirmiyahu told them not to do it because, first of all, they would be violating the oath that they had taken, and secondly, it would not succeed because they had taken an oath in the name of God, that they should listen to what God had to say, okay, which was to try to preserve peace. But they didn't listen. And when the Jews began the fight for their own freedom, they rebelled against Babylonia, then what do we find? That the other nations forbid nothing. They let the Jews. They left them in the lurch, and they were happy to take advantage of the defeat of the Jewish people by then going and seizing the land for themselves. Okay? So, Gedalia was appointed as governor for the remnant of the Jewish people that stayed in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? But these outsiders, they were Ammonites, okay? They wanted the land for themselves, so they entered a conspiracy. They murdered Gedalia ben Achikam, and then when this happened, the people who were still in the land, they became completely frightened, discouraged, and they decided the only thing to do is to flee the land and go find refuge in other places, particularly in the land of Egypt, believe it or not. Okay? And not only that, but they dragged Yirmiyahu together with them into Egypt, and this is where he died, an alien soul. Of course, this began, a new settlement of Jews in Egypt, and incidentally, we have about 70, 80 years ago, maybe more, there's an island in the middle of the Nile called Elephantine, and there they discovered, it's not so far from the Aswan Dam, it's a dam, that's Upper Egypt, so to speak, okay? They found many, many documents of Jewish Jews who had lived over there, and for example, business deals and court decisions and stuff like that. And so they found over there. It's a rich source of papyruses, or papyri, or whatever you want to call it, about life of the Jewish community in Egypt some 2,000 years ago or so.
This wasn't a Jewish community
No, Alexandria was settled later because Alexandria was not yet in existence. Then, Alexandria came into existence because of the conquest of the Greeks under Alexander the Great. And at that time, one of his generals, Ptolemy, declared himself as king of Egypt. And then you have the Ptolemaic dynasty, which lasted right through to Cleopatra. She was the last one of that. But in the interim, maybe a million Jews settled in Alexandria, and it became a tremendous metropolis. Right.
Not the
right. Yeah.
For the entire surrounding area.
Yeah.
The seat of learning.
It was a seat of learning. Of course, they translated the Bible into Greek over there, and we find Philo, for example, writing philosophy, and we find, of course, under his influence, we find others. I mean, of course, Josephus, for example. At a later date, after the destruction of the first, of the second temple, he didn't write in Latin. He wrote in Greek. He wrote in Greek.
Then the fight started between the Egyptians and the Greeks.
Yes, not only between Egyptians and Greeks, but afterwards there was a terrible slaughter of Jews in Alexandria too. It's another thing that took place. Because Jews were in sympathy with the idea that they wanted to throw off the rule of Rome. They wanted independence. So riots. Well, also there were anti-Semitic riots. Earliest anti-Semitic writings were in Greek. Josephus wrote a very famous little tractate.
Exactly.
Right. Against Appian, or Contra Appionem, and it's the Latin title that they give it, okay? In which he refutes the arguments of the anti-Semitan, claiming that the Jews were a bunch of lepers, and that Moshe Rabbeinu was a very horrible character and things like that and so on and so forth.
Didn't he write the history of Hashanah?
Yes, he also wrote the history of the Jewish people. He also wrote another group of...
It's
the Jewish War, but he wrote the Jewish Antiquities, he wrote a tremendous amount of business. The major problem with Josephus is that he wrote it from the point of view he wanted to be pleasing for the Romans.
Old
crop
going back before the
Maccabean
period is probably acceptable, but anything after that.
Yeah, well, there's no question. It's tinged by he wanted to put the Romans in a good light. I mean, this is what it was. Yeah, the major source, no question. Major source. We have some Latin historians too, who also spoke, for example, about the Jewish uprising, but they only devote a couple of chapters, and of course, no detail, and needless to say, no sympathy for Jews.
Jews of Alexandria dominated
the entire shipping industry and the Iranian. Yeah. Okay, getting back over here then. So, the question then is as follows, okay? We see then that Tzom Gedalia is singled out because of the tragedy to the Jewish people, which happened. Not only because he was a righteous person, and the death of a righteous person is as tragic to us as the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but very frankly, from a historical point of view, it marked the end, really, of the first Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael before they scattered to all parts of the Roman Empire. Although I have to tell you, even prior, even in the days of the first temple, there already was a Jewish diaspora. There already was. How do we know it? We know it from Yeshayahu. Because what does Yeshayahu say? Well, Yom HaYomahu, right, Tokav Yishuv Gadol, right, the day will come when the great shofar will sound, Ovdim Yeretz Ashur, then those who are wandering, you know, those in other words, living in the land of Ashur, far from Eretz Yisrael, right? Ovdim Yeretz Mitzrayim, right, and those who are in the land of Egypt, right, Yishtachu L'Hashem HaKadosh B'Yerushalayim, that they'll all come together and bow down before the Lord in Yerushalayim, and so on. So that even in his day, there already was the beginning of a Jewish diaspora in various lands, particularly along the coast of the Mediterranean. Okay? So, Jews were settled outside of Eretz Israel maybe 2,500 years ago or more. This is how old are some of the Jewish communities. Yeah, 27, 28, I mean, give or take a few numbers, you know, but Jewish settlement is very, very old.
Most of the Jewish community in places like Baghdad go back to the time of the Babylonian?
Yes and no. Yes and no. It is true that there always remained a Jewish settlement in Persia, and remain constantly over there until the Ayatollah, you know, put an end to it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So until our day, there was a continual presence, a Jewish presence in Persia, okay? And Babylonia, of course, was under the rule of the Persians. So,
Baghdad,
okay, first of all, Baghdad is a relatively new city.
Yeah, but up to
right.
40, so...
Yeah, okay, correct. Baghdad was founded, you know, after the Arab conquest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? No, the Iraq, after they conquered that. So then they established the city of Baghdad, and Jews flocked to it also because it's a capital city, there was business and everything else, and there was a very strong Jewish community in Baghdad, there was a Jewish community in Beirut, and certainly in Tehran, you know, there were Jewish communities in all these places.
The guy that got killed in Monaco or...
Yeah, I know what you mean. The Jewish millionaire, right? Yeah. What had happened recently, right? Yeah. All right. So anyway, as we say, we see that the Jewish diaspora is old, and in part it started because of what happened over here. V'amai korilei shavi. So why do they refer to it that in the Pasuk in Zechariah as the fast of the seventh month? So Shvi'i L'Chodoshim, because it's the seventh in the count of months, right? And Tzom HaAtziri, and it's called the fast of the tenth month, Asar B'Teves, right? This is the tenth day of Teves. Shabo Samach Melech Bado Yerushalayim, right? Because this is the day upon which the king of Babylonia approached, that is, he drew his forces near to Yerushalayim and began the siege of Yerushalayim at that particular time. How do we know this? We have a pasuk in Yechezkel which tells us that. Shenamar, as it's written, Vayehi Devar Hashem Elai Bashanah HaTshiyis, and the word of the Lord came to me in the ninth year, Bachodesh Vasiri, in the tenth month, Be'osel HaChodesh, on the tenth day of the month, Lemar saying, Ben Adam, son of man. This is the way Hashem refers to Yechezkel. He says, "Ksov lecha Hashem hayom." Write down, in other words, make a note, a permanent record of this particular day. As Etzem Hayom Hazeh, this very day, Samach Melch Bavel Yerushalayim, the king of Babylonia, has approached and begun the siege of Jerusalem. Okay? Va'amai Korilei Asiri, and why is this called then in Zechariah again, the fast of the 10th? Because it is Asiri L'Chadashim. It is the 10th of, in the count of months. So far, so good, right? All right. Now, he comes now to explain why he disagrees with Rabbi Akiva. So far, Rabbi Akiva says, you know, it's based upon the fact, fourth means the fourth month, right? Fifth means the fifth month, etc., etc., okay? This is his opinion. Now he comes in to explain what his interpretation is. He says, by the way, I just want to get back for one moment to the date that is mentioned by Yechezkel. What does it mean when it says the ninth year? The answer is... No. The answer is that the dating in the book of Yechezkel dates from the time of Golas Yerushalayim, the first Golas Yerushalayim. You understand? The first exile from Jerusalem. I mentioned that he was among the 50,000 Jews who were exiled to Babylonia by the Babylonians, because they hoped this way, by exiling the most learned, important Kohanim, exiling craftsmen and things like that, you know, that the Jews would remain leaderless and would be very easy to govern by Babylonia. Okay, now who was the king who at that particular time was reigning on the throne? No, it's Yechonyahu, or sometimes called Yehoyachin, okay? So Yechonyahu was the king at that particular time. In the eyes of Yechezkel, he was the legitimate ruler of Eretz Yisrael, and even though he was taken as a captive to Babylonia, where he remained in prison for some 30 years or close to 40 years, but in his eyes, he was the legitimate king. Whereas he considered Zedekiyahu as simply, as I mentioned before, like a vassal of the king of Babylonia. So that, therefore, the dating in Sefer Yechezkel normally is dated from that event, from the time of the first Golas, which took place in the year 597, approximately, before the common era. Okay? Remember, you go backwards. 597 is before 586. Okay. Meshuggah Nevel, but that's the way it works. Okay. All right. Now, what is his opinion? Where he says he disagrees with Rabbi Akiva. Says, "V'alo ha'yoru yizeh le'toy rishayim." Says, actually, you know, this last date that we mentioned, namely the fast of the 10th date, this should come first in the order. Right? Why? Because this was the first event that took place. After several years passed by, then what happened? Then after that, of course, you had this, you know, the city was breached, right? So we have Shavuos HaPetamos. And then after that, we have the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, right? Which, of course, would be Tisha B'Av. And then after that, we have the assassination of Gedaliah. So that would be Tzom Gedaliah. So he says, this event should be mentioned first in the order. Why then did Zechariah go in an opposite direction and mention first 4, 5, you know, 7 and 10, instead of saying 10, 4, 5, 7 or something like that, you understand? Why? So he says, why was it written over here? It says, Kedei lahasdir chodosh v'sikdon. It says, according to Rabbi Akiva, the reason why the Pesuk in Zechariah lists first 4 and then 5 and so on is because it goes according to the order of the months. But he says, Vani eini omer kein, but I disagree. I don't say the same. Ela tzomah asiri, you know, what should come first? First should come the fast day of the first month. Zechan misha b'teves. And he says, this is the fifth day of Teves. We say the tenth day of Teves, right? Because that's when it happened in the Bayis Sheni. We have to understand that, okay? But in the Bayis Rishon, in the days of the first temple, actually, the breach in the wall took place. The breach in the wall took place when? Beginning of the siege in the days of the Nebuchadnezzar began on Chamisha B'Tevis, okay? On the fifth day of Tevis. And but why do we observe the tenth? So he says, Shebo Bos Shemua Lagoyla, right? Because on that day, the day that on the fifth day of Tevis, the report finally reached the Jews in Golos, meaning the Jews living in the Babylonian captivity, Shehuk Sehayir, that the city had been smitten, okay? Shenemar, and again we have the Pasuk in Yechezkel that validates that. So it's why he, and it happened, Bishtei Esrei Shana. This is now what month? This is now the 12th, Alright, so Pasuk is Vayhi B'Shtei Esrei Shanah, and it happened in the 12th year, as I say. This is already after 3 years since the king of Babylonia had first begun the siege of Yerushalayim, and now 3 years later, Ba'asiri, in the 10th month, Ba'chamisha L'Chodesh, the Goluseinu, right, in the 5th day of the month of our exile, because, as I said, he counted the exile beginning, you know, with 597, right? So, boy, Elia Polit Yerushalayim, then a refugee came unto me from Yerushalayim, Lamor, and he said, Huk Sohair, the city has been smitten. In other words, the city was breached, etc. Okay. And the also Yom Shmua ki Yom Sreifa. And as a result, the day in which they had heard the bad news became as tragic a day as the day of the burning itself. Okay? Now, I simply want, in reference to that, to point a similar, parallel. Parallel is, when it comes to mourning, avelos, okay? We have a special din. And one is the din of Shmua Krova, and the other one is the din of Shmua Rechoka. Shmua Krova means that you get the report soon after the event took place, right? And Shmua Rechoka means that you get the report after, sometime after the event has taken place. In other words, if a person passes away, okay? And, you know, it's in a place where you don't get any news whatever about the death of that particular person until sometime after the actual event has taken place. The din is that if you receive the news within 30 days, then in that case, if you are, you know, one of the near relatives, you are obliged to sit shiva and to observe, you know, as if it had... as if you're actually present the day when the death had taken place. But if you have a Shmua Rechoka, in other words, if it's after 30 days, then you're only obliged to observe Shoa Achas. In other words, you observe for a short while mourning, and then you discharge your obligation of mourning. Okay? So, that being the case, we see then that Shmua, in other words, when you get the report of a tragedy, is important also because it is equated with the actual tragic event itself. So we can see over here when he says that, you know, also Yom Shmua, that they made the day in which the report reached them, Ki Yom Sreifa, as the day upon which the actual burning of the temple took place. So in other words, they made these days into fast days. Okay? And he says, when you're in Devorah Midvorah, you know, as a matter of fact, he says, I think that my reasoning is better than his. Shani Omer, because I say, Rishon Rishon, Let's go in chronological order. The first event that took place is what? King of Babylonia approaches. This happened in the 10th month, and therefore what? Then this is the first that should have been mentioned. Okay? And the last event that took place, which was of course the assassination of Gedaliah ben Ahikam, that should have been mentioned last. The Ruhmer, and he says, Rishon Achron, Yal Achron Rishon. He says, Punkt Fakert, he says. He starts with what is first, and he makes that last, and what is last, he makes it first. Okay? So, Elo Shehu Mona the Seder Chodoshim, but rather, he is counting in the order of the months, Vani Omer, Vani Mona, and I counted the Seder Parodus, the order, the chronological order in which it happened. All right. But, needless to say, until this point, what do we see? Whose opinion do we follow? We follow Rabbi Akiva, frankly. Why? Because this is the order in which the Pasuk in Zechariah, which is quoted as the text, you know, to speak about these fasts, occurs. Okay. Yes. Right.
They are made the day where they heard it,
right,
like the day when the
Beis
HaMikdash was built.
That's correct. In other words,
much later, to make a very bad analogy, if somebody hears, there's a man, you are under your aunt, is very, very sick, I don't know how long she's going to live.
Yeah.
So do you make that day to ask if she had died, he or she had died today? I mean, it doesn't fit.
No, as I say, with the idea of Shmua, okay, first of all, for now, you're not required, you know, to observe mourning, okay? That's bad news, I mean, right, right.
So let's not be, you hear something, that something happens.
Right.
You know nothing about the Shreifa, you don't know when, where, what, and how.
I know, but obviously when it's written over here that the Palit came, the refugee came from Yerushalayim, he had escaped, and he came to Bavel. And he told Yechezkel and the Jewish community what had happened. He gave specific details. He told them, you know, on this and this day, the Babylonians destroyed it, and so on and so forth. So, therefore, they observed the mourning in the 10th month. That's the idea. As if it had actually, as if they had actually been present in the 5th month in Yerushalayim when the burning of the Beis HaMikdash took place.
So why didn't he mention that they observed Tisha B'Av? The day when the Beis HaMikdash actually was
well, because after the bad news, then they decided to observe it for the future, that's all. First they had to hear about it before they could observe it, okay? It wasn't a yontov in the days. I mean, it wasn't a fast day in the days of the First Temple. Days of the First Temple, the only tannis that we know about is Yom Kippur. Except, I mean, that they would also decree a fast for emergencies. That we know. For Puronus, you know, something terrible was happening, Jewish existence was threatening, or whatever it may be, then in that case, they could proclaim a fast day. And we have examples, you know, that when, for example, they found, you know, the Sefer Torah in the Beis HaMikdash that had been hidden over there, and they realized how far many had strayed from it in that particular case, and they declared, you know, a fast day so the people should fast and repent, do tshuva and so on and so forth, in order to get back to the pure worship of Hashem the way it should have been, and so on. So, but as a regular fast day, only Yom Kippur in the days of the First Temple. All right, I think I'm going to stop at this particular point, because the next Indian that we go into is the question of Megillas Tainis, which we learned something about during the time when we studied Masechta Titus, but we'll have a chance to review it in Mi'as Hashem next week. Okay? Okay, tonight is the 1st of March, the year 2000, and we are currently on page on Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yudches, Omid Beis, roughly about 15 lines from the bottom, and we begin with a discussion of Megillas Tanis. Okay. So let me say something about Megillas Tanis before we actually begin the Gemara itself, so we'll know what we're talking about. This is probably one of the very oldest writings that we have after the close of the Bible. Okay? In other words, this was already composed in the days of the early teachers of the Talmud, but they continue also to record events in it afterwards. What the Megillus Tainis is, we have, you know, fractions, we have fragments of it today, okay, so that we know the nature of it. Of course, in the days of the Talmud, they had the complete text of it, and they knew, you know, all the references that are mentioned over there. It was a list of the various days in the year, and it was to indicate either which days, for example, are days marked by fasting, and which days are days upon which it is prohibited to fast. Okay? In some cases, why are these days prohibited to fasting?
So the answer is because they were days wherein, let's say, a disaster had been turned into a day of rejoicing. Okay? So this is Megillus Tainis. And during the days of the Second Temple, it was observed, and as we'll see, the question that they're going to raise is whether after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, whether the list that they have of days upon which we are prohibited from fasting is still in effect or not. Okay? So this is where we begin the discussion this evening. Okay? So it begins with the word, first of all, Itmar. Itmar means it was learned. Okay? Rabbi Chanina Amrei Bot Megillas Tanis, Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yishuv Ben Levi Amrei Loi Bot Megillas Tanis. Alright, so as we see that there was a difference of opinion about concerning whether or not Megillas Tanis has been abolished, that is no longer in effect, that is really what they mean, right, or whether it is still in effect. Okay, and there's a difference of opinion. Rav and Rabbi Chanina said that it's no longer in effect, whereas Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yishuv Ben Levi say that it still is effective. It has not been taken out of action, so to speak. Okay, so now the Gemara wants to know why. So they go back to the first opinion. Rav and Rabbi Chanina amrei betle Megillas Tanis, right? Why did they say that the Megillas Tainis is no longer in effect? So it says, Hechikola, this is what they meant to say. Bizman sheyesh shalom, at a time when there is peace, then the yunisas and the simcha, right? Then these days are for gladness and rejoicing. Ein shalom, but if there is no peace, then tzom, right? In that particular case, these are days of fasting. Okay? So far, it's not difficult to understand. They felt that what is the meaning of shalom? Shalom, as we had defined last week, meant that the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, right? That Jews were living under their own rule and not subject to foreign rule. So that this is peace, okay, from the point of view of, whether to fast or not to fast, okay? But obviously, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we have to say that this is already a case of Ein Shalom. Since it's Ein Shalom, then in that case, the feeling that they had was that these days no longer have any effectiveness, and therefore, whatever days were listed, either as days of joy or days of fasting, should be abolished. And this is what the Gemara says in the next couple of lines, the next couple of words, right? Okay?
May I ask a
question? Sure.
Both of them should be eliminated, both.
Well, this is what the Gemara is now going to say. Okay? Yeah. It says, and it says, Rahanach, and these days, Name, meaning whether it's the days of rejoicing, Kihani, are the same as the days of fasting, that in both cases, whatever was listed as a day, either to rejoice or to fast, was no longer effective. Okay? This is their opinion. Now, we also learned, however, that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yishuv Ben Levi, they were, of course, of the contrary opinion. Amrei, they said, Lo bot lo Megillas Tanis, right? The Megillas Tanis has not been abolished, but subject to the following. Hanehu the Talin Hu Rachmona Beminyan Beis HaMikdash Avo Hanach Kidekayme Kayme, meaning as follows. Okay, we have listed and we spoke about last week and the week before about the fast days that are mentioned in the book of Zechariah. Zechariah, if you remember, was among the last of the prophets. He lived in the time when the second Beis HaMikdash was being rebuilt, and the people came to him with a question: should we continue to observe these days, which have been days of fasting, right? Namely, and we saw it, Tzom HaRevi'i, right, which is of course Shavuot Adamas, right, and Tzom HaChamishi, Tisha B'Av, Tzom HaShvi'i, which of course is Tzom Gedalia, and then Tzom HaAsiri, which is Asar B'Teves. Shall we continue to observe these days, the days of fasting, right? And he said that these days, he prophesied that these days will be turned into what? Days of Sasa V'Simcha, the days of gladness and rejoicing. In other words, the fasting that no longer will be. So, what is it connected with? It's connected with the fact as to whether the Beis HaMikdash is in existence or the Beis HaMikdash is not in existence, okay? If the Beis HaMikdash is in existence, then in that particular case, these days should be observed as what? As days of rejoicing. The Beis HaMikdash is not in existence, then these days, that again, those that were specified in this prophecy of Zechariah, then they will revert again to days of fasting. Okay? So, they are connected in one way or another with what? With the temple, with the Beis HaMikdash. If the temple is rebuilt, then this is what the procedure will be. If the temple is not rebuilt, then in that particular case, then the opposite will take place, right? In other words, there'll be days of sadness and fasting. Okay. So these days, then he says, the Torah itself, meaning, of course, in this case, the Bible, because actually it's not the Torah in the sense, the narrow sense of the five books of Moshe, right? But in the more, in the broader sense, that this is part of the Holy Scriptures, right? So these days are dependent, the Torah itself, then in other words, the Bible itself specified that these are dependent upon the building of the Beis HaMikdash. However, the other days, days that are not mentioned in this connection, but for example, celebrating a victory, celebrating something else, and so on and so forth, then in that particular case, it's the Dekayim and Kayim. In other words, if they're there and people feel like observing them, then they'll observe them. But if they don't feel like observing them, so in that case, it's garnished, you know. But they're there, and for people, if they so desire, then they can observe it. So this is their feeling. Okay. Now, Masi Rav Kana. So Rav Kana asked Akasha. Says, Masi. Says, I want to tell you about a certain event, that what happened. The Gozru Ta'anis, that the people declared a fast day, you know when? The Chanukah, on the holiday of Chanukah itself, Bilod, in the city of Lod. What in English is called Lod, but you know, in Eretz Israel, it has regained its name of Lod. And of course, this is where Ben Gurion Airport is located. You come into Eretz Israel from the United States, this is the place where you land, okay? Lod. And of course, it's an old Jewish community that dates back to the days of the, you know, Beis HaMikdash, okay? So they declared on Chanukah that there was a fast day. Obviously, something must have happened. And they decided, you know, that you had to fast that particular day. No, so what happened? The Yorad Rabbi Eliezer, the Rachatz. So on the day that they declared a fast day during Chanukah, you know what Rabbi Eliezer did? He went and he went into the bathhouse and he bathed, which is something that should not be done on a fast day. Okay? And not only that, the Rabbi Yeshua. The Siper, you know what Rabbi Yeshua did? He went to the barber and he took a haircut. Okay? Again, you don't take a haircut. I mean, we know, for example, you know, beginning with Pesach, you know, we have days in which we don't cut our hair. Naturally, during the 3 weeks, we don't cut our hair. And so these are days of mourning, so we observe them. And on the fast day, it's not the right day, you know, to go in to take a haircut. That they would be contravening the spirit of the fast day, right, to do it on that particular day. But nevertheless, what did Rabbi Yeshua do? He went and he took a haircut. But they're not finished yet, these two gentlemen, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, you know, the Amru Lahem, and you know what they said to the people of the Lord? They said to them, Tzuruvi Hisanu, you go out and make a fast, Amashe Istasiya, Amashe His Anisem. Because of the fact that you declared a fast day on Hanukkah, so therefore, not on Hanukkah itself, but after Hanukkah is over, you know what you got to do? You have to make an additional fast day because of the fact that you fasted on the day when you should not have fasted. Okay? In other words, right, right. Now, to get back, we have to understand. What did we say just a few lines up above? We said that none of the feelings of those who said, you know, that it's botlock, right, that the Megillah's time is finished, and then it said, and these days, just like these days, in other words, fast days and days of joy. So, obviously, the people in Lod felt that what? Since Megillah's Tanis is finished, so even Hanukkah, being a day of rejoicing, but it's no longer operative. So in that case, if you want to fast, if you have to fast, you fast on that day. You understand? Whereas, what were Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua emphasizing at this particular point? That there is still something effective in what is written in Megillah's Tanis, and if it says that Hanukkah is a day, of course that means, you know, the days of Hanukkah, right? That the days of Hanukkah are days upon which you are not allowed to fast, that is still in effect. And therefore, the fact that you declared a fast day on this day means that now you have to do tshuva by fasting an additional day for the fact that you violated the joyousness of Hanukkah by fasting. Okay. So, Amar Rav Yosef. So, Rav Yosef comes along and he says, Shani Hanukkah. He says, no, Hanukkah is different. Taka, he says, Megillah's Tanis is no longer in effect, right? But there are certain days that are mentioned over there as holidays that are still in effect. Example, Hanukkah. Why is Hanukkah different? The Ikar Mitzvah. Because there is a mitzvah. What is the mitzvah connected with Hanukkah? This is, of course, the light. Lights, Hanukkah lights, okay? So Abaye said to him, that's an argument. That's no argument. He says, V'sibotel ini v'sibotel mitzvah. So, all right, if Megillah's Tanis is no longer in effect, then let Hanukkah be abolished, and the mitzvah also is to be pushed aside. In other words, it's no longer to be effective. You don't have to light Hanukkah lights anymore. Well, I don't have to tell you that this was not very happy, not a very good statement, right? So, Elo Amar Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef comes and says, no, he says, I want to tell you, Shani Hanukkah, there's a difference when it comes to Hanukkah, because the Mefarsim Nisa, because part of the mitzvah of Hanukkah is not just lighting lights, but it is that through the candles, through the lights that we light, we proclaim the miracle that took place on Hanukkah, and that is important. Pirsuma Benissa, as we would say, this is one of the important mitzvahs of Hanukkah, just as it is of Purim. In other words, to celebrate the great miracles that took place to our people by publicizing it. Today in Hebrew, Pirsum means publicity, okay? So we have to publicize these various holidays so that people should not forget and they should remember them and remember that this is all due to the miraculous intervention of the Rabbeinu Shalom to help us. Okay. So, question still remains, however, what? is Megillah's Tanya still in effect or not? So now we come to a new event. Moshe Ravacha Bar Huna. Ravacha Bar Huna questioned it because he had a different problem. Okay? It is as follows. In Megillah's Tainus, it is written, Bitlosa B'Tishrei, in the third day of Tishrei, B'Telas Adkata Min Shtaraya. It says, at that particular point, the mention of God's name was taken out of the various notes that people would write. As, for example, a loan or something, a promissory note and things like that. So, what is this all about? So he says, Shagazra Malchus Yovon Gezeira Shalola Haskir Shem Shemaim Al Pihem. He says, the kingdom of the Greece made a decree that the name of God should not be mentioned by the Jewish people, right? In other words, what did the Greeks try to do? They tried to destroy, to wipe out the observance of the Jewish religion, right, from the people you have? Oh, I see you have your own Gemara. Okay. We're on Yud Ches Amud Beis right now, right? Okay. So, part of their campaign was then that therefore God's name should not be mentioned publicly by Jews. I don't have to tell you, of course, the fact that Jews should not daven, Jews should not perform other mitzvahs and things like that, right? So, one of the things then that happened was that Uchshegova, Malchus Chashmenai, and then when the Hasmonean kingdom became mighty, became powerful, the Nitzchum, and they were able to defeat the Greeks, and of course establish, you know, the kingdom under the leadership, under the rule of the Hasmonean rulers. So his Kinu, then, in that particular case, the Hasmonean king made a takana, in other words, he made a decree, Sheyehu Maskirin Shem Shemayim Afilu Bishtoros, that Jews should mention the name of God, of course it says the name of heaven, but it means the name of God, right? The name of God, even in the documents that they wrote. The Chachoyu Kosvin, and this is the Nusach, this is the formula which they used to use in order to write their notes. They would say, Bishnas Kach Vechach, LeYochanan Kohen Gadol LeElyon. Okay? In the year so and so, Yochanan, the high priest, who is a high priest to God on high. Okay? LeElyon. So, in other words, they would write, you know, the day, so, you know, the such and such a year, during the time that Yochanan Kohen Gadol was the high priest, and then he said, the high priest to whom? High priest of the eternal God, okay? God on high. So, Uchshashomu Chachomim B'Dobar, and then when the sages heard about this decree, Amru, they said as follows, L'mochor ze poreas chavo, in the future, literally, tomorrow morning, right, what's going to happen? This man will come into the court, he'll repay the debt that he owes. The Nimsoshtabutobashpan, you know what he'll do with the note? Tear it up, throw it into the garbage. So is it right to throw into the garbage something which has God's name in it? It's not right. Okay? So therefore, Uvitlam. Okay, that's the reason why then the Chachamim said, let's abolish this decree that you should mention God's name in the notes. They also Hayom Asur Yom Tov, and therefore that day the sages decreed that it should be a Yom Tov, okay, a day of joy. And obviously what happened, this was written down where? In the Megillah's Tanis, so that people should remember that this particular day was a day of rejoicing, because the decree not to desecrate the name of God on notes that people are going to throw away subsequently, right, you know, so that practice came to an end. Of course, I mean, you know, it reminds all of us of the fact that we have a custom today that if we write God's name, we spell it G-D, or we use the term Hashem instead, or something like that, and so on, in order to make sure, you know, that we don't throw God's name into the wastebasket, okay? Which, of course, is the wrong thing to do. I won't go into all the arguments in the halacha today as to how proper it is if you write, you know, God in English, whether it is a violation of, you know, not to take God's name in vain or not. But, of course, you know, this is the ultimate source of it, to mean that thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, which means even when you write God's name, don't do it in such a way, you know, that it will be in vain. Yes?
Well, I don't understand the logic of the connection between holidays, fast days,
yeah,
and with the building of the temple. What's that got to do with the temple?
Okay.
What's the logic?
The logic is that when are Jews very, very happy? They're very happy at a time when they are in control of their own land, they're not making war with their neighbors, and the Beis HaMikdash is there in existence.
So
that's the ideal type of Jewish government that, you know, we hope to see, hope to live under, okay? So, and those, if all these conditions are fulfilled, then in that particular case, all the various fast days that were, you know, that were ordained because of the tzoras of the Jewish people, will no longer be observed as fast days, but instead we will fulfill that which the prophet Zechariah said, namely that we'll turn them into days of rejoicing and gladness.
They're also talking about abrogating all the joyous holidays too.
Yeah, because these were additional holidays, and you know, the feeling was not as long as you don't have to have fast days, then you can live, you know, no day.
Right. About those things that mentioned in Gilles Tanis, or
yeah, that's what they're talking about, specifically.
Talking.
Right. But look, if people want to make a festive day for themselves, it's up to hate. In the last chapter in Brochus, I don't know if you remember, we learned that if a nest takes place for a particular person, he can observe that particular day, he and his family and so on, observe it as a day of rejoicing for the future generations as well, you see. So that won't interfere with whether the Megillus Titus is still in effect or not. Anybody who has a joyous occasion can certainly celebrate it. Why not? But the point is that you don't have to fast from that point on when on Sar Batavis and some Gedalia and so on. Those days no longer are official fast days. That's what he's saying. Yes?
After the fact, we can assume that the decision was that decision didn't stand, because to this day, those days are being observed.
Yes, of course, because...
And we know the
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But of course, the reason being that because it's Ein Shalom, we're not living in the era when there is peace in Eretz Yisrael. We're not living in a period when, you know, the Beis HaMikdash is in existence. It's not, unfortunately, right? And we're not living in a period where Jews are free to rule themselves without interference from foreign governments. Bill Clinton itself, you know, is a prime example of the pressure put upon the Israeli government. Yes.
How about this discussion is taking place after the fact of the temple, right?
That is correct. Correct. This took place later, right. So the question over there, right, so that the argument that between the Chachamim was, frankly, are these days still effective or not effective? Should we continue to observe the holidays? Should we continue to observe the fast days on these days?
And the holidays they're referring to are not the ones from the Torah.
No. That definitely not. We're only talking about additional holidays that were... I mean, did you ever hear of a holiday called the Day of Nicanor, which happens to be mentioned in Gilas Tanis? Nicanor is a Greek general, and when he was defeated by the Jews, so the day of that victory, they made it to a holiday, okay? And for centuries after, they continued to celebrate the Day of Nicanor. But I don't think, if I would ask anybody in the city of Springfield if they ever heard of the Dave the Conner. I don't know how many replies I would get, but they ever heard of it. Yes.
I was just reading an anthology about Quorum.
Yes.
Apparently, sometime, I believe during the War of Independence, it may have been at the end of the Holocaust, and something very tragic, the news that was coming out was so tragic that the Rabbanim and Israel together, the one and only time, said that Quorum would not have to be observed with all of its happiness and joy associated with it. It would still be the
Megillah reading and so on. You wouldn't have to have an Adlo Yada or something like that, right? And to make parades and costume parties and things like that, right?
It's only going to be because of the extreme circumstances that were going on in the country
at that time. Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. But as I say, you know, life goes on, and of course what happened is that once the danger passed, the Holocaust was over, so people went back again to celebrating Purim. At first it was a little difficult, but, you know, as time goes on, you forget the bad and you emphasize the good. What shall I say?
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
When we were talking about the holidays, you mentioned in the candles being the mitzvah.
Right.
Now, when we're talking mitzvah, we're talking commandment.
The commandment, right.
And so this commandment is outside the 613.
This is correct. You asked a very good question, Sylvia. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, you asked a very good question. Yeah. Okay. The answer is that we have certain mitzvahs that we call mitzvahs derabbanan. In other words, these are mitzvahs that are rabbis ordained, and they are to be observed as if they were mitzvahs written in the Torah. So one of them is Ner Chanukah, okay? Another one is Ner Shabbos.
Near
Shabbos. Where does it say in the Torah that you have to light candles for Shabbos? It doesn't say that. But our Chachomim decided that this is so important that they made it into a mitzvah, that you have to light candles on Kovet Shabbos. Gemara and Shabbos mentions the basic reason why. It's to bring gladness in the home and to bring peace between husband and wife. I mean, these are the ideas. The house is to be, you know, radiant with brightness, okay? Not... I mentioned the Karaites, for example, or the Sadducees, you know, who they prefer to sit in darkness on Shabbos rather than to light lights. Because they took literally what we read in the Torah this coming Shabbos, most of our Reish, Bechol Mosh, Vesechem, Yom HaShabbos, you are not to kindle fire in your homes on the Sabbath day. So they took it literally. But of course, you know how we understand it. We mean that on Shabbos itself, it's prohibited to do it. But before Shabbos, it's a mitzvah to do it, okay? Just as it's a mitzvah to have nice warm food on Shabbos also. Doesn't mean that you're desecrating Shabbos by eating cold food, but still, a lot of food tastes a lot better when it's warm as compared to when it's cold itself. And it adds more to the quality of what we call Oneg Shabbos, which incidentally is something which is already referred to in Yeshayahu. The Korosol HaShabbos Oynek, he says. You should call the Shabbos a day of delight. Therefore, a Jew is required, you know, to celebrate Shabbos as a day of joy and delight. With everything that we do in order to enhance our joy on Shabbos is a mitzvah, okay? So, that's also a mitzvah derabbanan. Because lighting the candles was never mentioned in the Bible itself, okay? And of course, the reading the Megillah on Purim, from the point of view that this is not where in the five books of Moses. It wasn't in existence at that time, okay? So that therefore, it was ordained by Queen Esther and Mordechai, right? And by the Chachamim of that age, that from now on, we are to read the story of Purim every year and to celebrate in the manner in which the Jews celebrated, namely by reading the Megillah, right? And by, of course, sending shalach monos and making a mishta, right, and giving gifts to the poor. These are the mitzvahs of Purim. And so these are mitzvahs that Rabbanan too. In other words, that our sages commanded us. So, but they have sanctity because we Jews observe them. So with Hanukkah, therefore, it was a mitzvah of the Rabbanan. And why? So as he explained over here, Pirsum and Nisan. It's in order to celebrate and to publicize the miracle that took place with Hanukkah. Okay, so to conclude this particular story, so our sages then at that time decided that on the third day of Tishrei, right, they would make it as a holiday in order to celebrate the fact that they decided, you know, to remove the name of God from documents that are only going to wind up eventually in the wastebasket. Okay. What is the date again that was mentioned over there? Third day of Tishrei. Okay. Now, what is the third day of Tishrei called to mind? First of all, this is Tzom Gedaliah. But remember what? In the days of the Second Temple, did they observe Tzom Gedaliah? They didn't, right? Based upon what Zechariah said, to turn into days of gladness, so that was it. Okay. Now, Megillus Tainus, however, adds more. Not just to this event, but to all events. It says that these days, which are meant to be days of festivity, these are days, first of all, it says that you're not allowed to make any hesped on those days. You know what a hesped is? A funeral eulogy, okay? Not allowed to make a funeral eulogy on these days. Of course, to this day, as a result, those of us who follow the Ashkenazi custom, so we do not say, for example, the Kel Mali Rachamim on those days in case a burial has to take place, or even the shul over here. There are times in which I have to make for a month in advance, like before the beginning of Nisan. I have to go a whole month in advance to make mullahs because during the month of Nisan, I'm not going to recite the Kel Mali Rachamim. Okay? So, we observe that, and particularly eulogies, too, are not supposed to be made. You know, in America, unfortunately, rabbis are subject to what? They're subject to Congress, to congregants, you know, who they pass away, and I think to go and say, you know, I'll say a kapitel tehillim and let's go to the burial. A very firm community can understand that. But a not so firm community will find it very difficult to accept it. You understand? I mean, it happened, for example, when Anne's father, Oliver Sholem, passed away Shabbos Cholamed Pesach. Well, in that particular case, there was no eulogy or anything, no hesped. You know, it said Kapitlach Tilim, and they took him to the Beis Elam, you know, in order to have the Kavura. Okay. The same thing happened again with other cases that I witnessed. But you know where? In Borough Park, in Muncie, in communities like that, where, you know, the tradition is still strong that you do that. But in Springfield, it's much more difficult to have a Levaya on any of these days and to say, you know what, I'm not going to make any eulogy because I'm not allowed to make a eulogy. So as a result, you know, even though according to Jewish tradition I'm not allowed to say a few words, you know, but nevertheless, how can I let this day pass without saying something about etc., etc., you understand? So this is what happens at on the bias in our community, and it's not just Springfield, it's everywhere, it's the same thing, right? So Megillus Tainus went one step further. Megillus Tainus went one step further in saying that not only that day you're not allowed to have a hesped, not allowed to eulogize, not allowed to say, you know, a memorial prayer of the type like the Kel Mali Rachamim, but even the day before and the day after you're not allowed to do it. In other words, 3 days in a row. So this is what's going to lead up now to the next question. Okay? It says, V'yisal kodatek, we're on the second line from the bottom right. Okay? V'yisal kodatek. And if you have the opinion, but the Megillus Tainus, right, that the Megillus Tainus is no longer in effect, so, kamaisa batel, nachmanaisa matzifim, are you to say then that whatever was mentioned in the early days, right, are now null and void, but we still can add days to, you know, the Megillus Tainus, on which we have to observe this? then they say, Hachem and Maya Skina. So, what are we talking about over here? So he says, Bisman Shabes Hamikdash Kayom, right? As long as the temple is in existence. You have now the second, the one, yeah, this one. Here.
Yeah, no.
Return the first?
Yeah. Okay. This is the new page coming out. Yeah. Your test on the dollar, right?
Here.
Yeah. Okay, so he says, look, as long as the temple was in existence, then in that particular case, we could say that what? I'm going to explain this was observed, right? But if the Beis HaMikdash is no longer in observed, right, then we should say that the whole thing should be thrown out of the window. So here we have another problem. Specifically, he says, first of all, could we apply to it the fact that Havale Yom Shenehereg Bo Gedalia Ben Achikam, right? Couldn't we say that, look, this is the day upon which Gedalia ben Achikam was assassinated, right? He was murdered on this day, and therefore what? So, in that particular case, if the Beis HaMikdash is in existence, then do we have to observe it?
No.
No, but if the Beis HaMikdash is no longer in existence, then what? Then we have to observe it, okay? So, Amar Rav, so Rav said, Lo Nitzvacho, the reason why we have to mention this is, Ela Le'esoa Shelefonov, right? It's because we want to also say that, okay, at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we no longer have to fast on what? On Tzom Gedalia, right? Okay. But, this is also to include what? The day prior to that, because we said that according to Megillus Tainus, we said that these days are days upon which you fast, you know, you don't fast not only on the day itself, but also on the day before and on the day after, right? So in that particular case, so why shouldn't we say then that the reason why we mention this is order, you know, to say that on the day prior to that, which would be the second day of Tishrei, also, we don't fast, right? So he says, Shelefonov,